From NPR is made possible in part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from The Great Impasta, a restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Great Impasta is at 114 West Church in Champaign. The staff at The Great Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting WILL AM 580.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. Our guest in this portion of the program is Andrew Carroll. He is the director of the Legacy Project, and he is a person bound and determined to preserve war correspondence. He is the editor most recently of Behind the Lines. It's a collection of letters that looks at warfare through the correspondence of U.S. and foreign soldiers and civilians. It follows the publication of an earlier collection of correspondence titled War Letters. Studs Terkel said of that book that the letters it contained were more revelatory and more powerful than any dispatch from the front. It is the truly felt history of what war is all about. War Letters is organized by the wars America has fought, beginning with the Civil War and taking readers through the Persian Gulf War, Somalia, and Bosnia. The second collection, Behind the Lines, is organized by theme. It contains letters of love, family, and friendship, letters of combat, humorous letters, letters about civilians caught in the crossfire, and letters written in the aftermath of war. This collection contains letters from around the world. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with your questions and comments. If you're listening in the Champaign-Urbana area, you can join the discussion with a telephone call to 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. You may also call toll-free if you're outside the Champaign-Urbana area. The toll-free number is 800-222-9455. Both Behind the Lines and War Letters are published by Scribner. I also want to mention that Andrew Carroll will be in East Central Illinois later this week. He'll be on the campus of Eastern Illinois University in Charleston. Among the events scheduled for his visit, a talk Thursday evening at 7 in the Lumpkin Building, and a book signing Friday from 11 a.m. until 1 p.m. at the EIU Union Bookstore. There will also be screenings of a new adaptation of the PBS documentary War Letters this weekend and next weekend at the Tarbell Arts Center. You can contact the Arts Center for more information on that. Andrew Carroll, our guest this afternoon, director of the Legacy Project. You can join the discussion with a phone call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Andrew Carroll, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
It's great to be with you. Thank you.
The Legacy Project was launched in 1998 with the help of the Dear Abby column. Tell us what happened. What inspired the Legacy Project, and how did Dear Abby get wind of it?
Well, the whole irony of this project is that I'm not military. No one in my family has ever served in the armed forces. What happened was we had a fire in our home in Washington, D.C., years before the beginning of the Legacy Project, and everything was wiped out. The worst part of it for me was just it was losing all of our family letters. Obviously, nobody was hurt in the blaze, which would have been the worst thing. Everyone got out okay. And you know, the one thing that was truly replaceable were the correspondence. And it just got me thinking about the importance of letters. This is really before the advent of email. This is in the early 90s that I was thinking about this. And I was talking with veterans, people who were friends of our family or coaches or teachers or just people I'd known, neighbors who had served. And I was really shocked by how many of them said, you know, I threw all my war letters away. And it just seemed that we were losing something valuable. So I, almost on a whim, I wrote to Dear Abby and said I was starting this new initiative, the Legacy Project, and could she help us spread the word, encourage her readers both to save their war letters, and if they wanted to send a photocopy to me, we would start this archive where at least there'd be a separate copy, so in case they lost theirs, someone else had one. Well, and so that started November 11, 1998. That's when the column launched.
Yeah. So how long was it before you were deluged with letters?
About 72 hours. Yeah. The post office called, which was unusual, and they said, "Is this Andrew Carroll?" And I said, "Yes, it is." They said, "You need to get down here now." And I told them, "I'm so sorry. I rented this little post office box because it was the cheapest one they had, and I was just out of college at the time." And so I said, "Look, I'm going to jump on my bike. I've got a huge backpack. I'll come down. I'll clear out the box. I really apologize. I didn't check it before." And they said, "You might want to bring a car." There were just bins and bins and bins of letters coming in from all over the country representing every war in American history. And as someone who wasn't familiar with warfare, these letters were like nothing I'd ever read before. And one of the main reasons I'm coming to Illinois Thursday and Friday is actually because we're doing a play. It's not so much a screening as a play based on the letters we've received. And it'll be all weekend, January 27th, 28th, 29th, and then February 4th, 5th, and 6th at the Tarbell Arts Center. And I read these letters probably hundreds of times in the process of doing the books, and then in talking about them in speeches and so forth. It wasn't until I heard them read by actors that even they came alive for me. And you get to see the personality or hear the personalities of these troops and people on the home front. It's not just the combatants, but the spouses, the men and the women on the home front waiting for their son or daughter to come home or for their husband or wife. And so that's, I'm really looking forward to this because the letters are so unexpected that, you know, we all think, okay, you hear the word war letters or the phrase war letters, you think you know what it is. Okay, combat letters, dear mom, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But these letters are always a surprise in what they convey and the sparks of personality that come out. And that's one of the reasons why I love going to these productions. And this is a new script we're doing, which I think is better than anything that's been put together yet based on the letters that we have. We've tried this in other cities, and we've always had a really good response. And just from what I'm hearing from the people who are involved with the production, everyone's very excited about it. But it is part of this larger mission to get these voices out there, to help people get a better idea of what our men and women in the armed forces go through. And it's timeless. You know, even though these letters, we do have some letters from Iraq and Afghanistan, but a lot of these letters go back to the Civil War and the Revolution and World War I or World War II. But there is a timeless quality about these experiences that I think, you know, make the written words that these troops put down so absolutely compelling and riveting in so many cases.
Yeah. Now, before you found yourself immersed in these letters, at the outset of this project, what were your expectations and when and how did they shift?
It was just such a new process to me. I think people have asked me, what's changed about you in working on this effort? Has it made you less hopeful in humanity? Because I read so many letters that do focus on the trauma of war and the eyewitnesses who went to the concentration camps during World War II or who looked over the fields of Gettysburg or Antietam during the Civil War and just saw the slaughter that was going on. And we definitely have letters that showcase that horror and that talk about the terrifying aspects of warfare. But what also comes through is the humanity and the compassion. And we have these amazing letters of reconciliation between former enemies, even, you know, Civil War troops who fought on opposite sides and became friends, or World War I soldiers, or even a more recent correspondence involving a Saudi Arabian reporter and a man who, after 9/11, was just furious at what the participation of the Saudis in 9/11. And every time I think, I assume, or other people assume, we've exhausted a subject matter, whether it's combat or love or friendship or faith, we find a letter that's just so new and so different. Some of them very funny, and I can't emphasize enough that in the play that we're doing, War Letters, this weekend, and then in the books themselves, there's a lot of humor. This is how the troops cope, and so that was a big surprise to me. But the biggest thing I think I got out of this was just how much my admiration for these men and women has grown in reading their letters. I had no idea of the real sacrifices they make until I read their letters home, until I saw the fear they went through. And not just combat, but the time away from their loved ones. We've got some really beautiful letters by parents who couldn't be there, a father who couldn't be there for the birth of his child. So So he wrote a letter home to the child, not knowing the soldier if he would ever come home alive. And these might be the only words that that child would have from his father. And this is the kind of humanity and the poignancy that comes through in these letters, and I think what makes them so powerful.
Yeah. I was also touched by the excerpts that you included in War Letters in your introduction, excerpts of letters that came with the letters.
The cover letters, that really stunned me. I was not expecting those. So with every letter that someone sends in, there's also a message that they include from, it might be the daughter or the son of a veteran, and they would say, these are letters that my dad wrote during World War II, and he never spoke about his experiences, and it wasn't until I found his old letters up in a trunk in the attic that I got a better idea of who he was. And there's some really heartbreaking comments in these. One woman said, my grandfather was the most curmudgeonly guy I'd ever met. We never really connected. And after he passed away, I came across his World War II letters that written to my grandmother, and they were just teenagers at the time. And he was so funny and so whimsical. And it was a side of my grandfather that I'd never seen before. And I don't know if the war kind of snuffed it out of him because of all that he had seen, or if he just hid it from us, throughout his adulthood. But these letters were the first time I felt like I really got to know my grandfather, and that even though he'd passed away for the first time, I was really connected to him. And through the Legacy Project, a lot of people have been inspired to go to their attics, their basements, to see what they have, and not to throw these letters away, because they contain so much wisdom and so many great stories, and that's what we try and show through the books and through the production.
Yeah. Well, in the opening to the introduction to Behind the Lines, which is called Behind the Lines, which is in War Letters.
Yes. You're the first person to notice that, except for my mom. I sort of stole my own introduction title for the next book, but it fits so perfectly. But Behind the Lines was, you're right, that was the intro title, but also the name of the next book.
But in this introduction, a couple of things I want to share this with listeners. One, attached to a handful of correspondences from Vietnam, was this note. Dear sir, please accept these letters that my brother had written to my mother. My brother is missing. Parenthetically, not a POW. He was never right after he returned home, and one day he was just gone. I hope to make his life worth something. I miss him very much. And then this from a widow. I am a widow, 85 years old, and my husband and only son have passed. My husband served in Patton's Third Army. There is no one I can give these, my husband's letters to, so you may have them. Please remember him.
I think you've touched on why this project has become so personal to me. Aside from the fire, which is, the reason we started this and that it has this very personal beginning, I've gotten to know these people and that they've shared these incredibly touching stories with me. And I feel like I have a thousand adopted grandparents around the country because so many of the people who sent in are veterans or they're in their 80s or 90s now. And I really just am so grateful for their generosity because there is some tough stuff that they share and some very intimate things, too. We've got some pretty funny letters, and one of my favorite stories in the book, which is in Behind the Lines, is a woman in Georgia. She was a teenager during World War II. She wrote a letter to a Marine whom she did not know. He was a friend of a friend, but she wanted to help boost his morale, let him know that, the States, everyone back home was thinking about them and his comrades. And when he got that letter, he was smitten. He just instantly fell in love with this young woman. He wrote back to her. They began this very intense correspondence. And after a couple, I think months, he proposed to her through the mail. And she said yes. And the day he came back to the United States, he survived the Pacific Campaign in Iwo Jima. They got married. It was the first time they'd ever set eyes on one another. And that whole courtship was through their letters. And it's just an example of the power of letters. And also just the generosity of this woman to share these love letters that were very intimate, very personal, from back when she was just a teenager meeting her fiancé and then eventual husband.
Yeah. There was a letter that I read last night, and I found myself reading it aloud to my husband. And it is also about love, and it is from a woman serving in World War II, Lieutenant Irma Myers. And she's writing her folks, "Dear folks, I got married, but not to the guy you thought I was going to get married to. I fell in love with somebody else." And it's very funny. But also, she says there, very movingly as well, she says, "I want to come home and have a baby."
Yep. And the thing I like about that letter, too, is it focuses on women in the armed forces, and they don't get enough attention. And we've got some amazing letters coming from Iraq and Afghanistan by women who there really is no front line in these countries, that wherever you go, you're at risk. And so they're very much in the eye of the storm. And we've had even letters from past, from World War II, of people, of women who've been in danger and who've risked their lives. And that's one of the things we try and do with this project, is bring attention to these individuals who may not have gotten the acclaim that they deserve and show their heroism and their sense of sacrifice.
Yeah. We have, Andrew, we have the audio version of the first volume, War Letters, and we wanted to give listeners the chance to hear a voice or two from the past. And you mentioned how powerful it is to hear these letters read aloud. And so depending on the time we have, we'll try to listen to a couple of the letters from War Letters. I would like to begin with one from the Civil War. If you have the book there, the page is page 48, and the year is 1861. And this fellow by the name of P. Burns is writing of the misery to come. Would you like to offer us some perspective about this letter before we hear it?
Just that what's interesting about it is that, and this is true at the beginning of every war, which is why I find these letters so important, that there's a lot they can teach us about these experiences. At the beginning of every war we've ever fought in, there's always a great sense of exuberance and a sense of almost exhilaration of the troops going off on the great adventure, as they would say in World War I. But there were some who knew that there was reason to be somber and that what was to come may not be the troops may not feel as enthusiastic about it once they really got into the thick of the fight. And what's great about P. Burns' letters, he recognizes this from the very beginning.
And this letter takes him through our part of the country.
Yes.
Okay.
Nashville, June 10th, 1861. Miss Anne, thinking it would not be amiss to drop you a few lines to let you know what was going on in the Confederate States, and also when I was going to return, I take the present opportunity after the noise and bustle of the election is over. After leaving your quiet and beautiful town, I arrived the same evening in St. Louis, procured your music with the exception of a few pieces which I could not get in the city. They cost me more than I expected, but I suppose not more than common. I went to the Free State of Illinois, found all my folks, and stayed over a week. Started then for this city. As the boats quit running down the river, had to come by railroad all the way. Rather tiresome business. Found people in Illinois fixing for war. Came through Indiana, they were fixing. Crossed Kentucky, they were preparing. Arrived in my old state of Tennessee, never saw the like. Men, women, and children are imbued with the spirit of war. There are over 80,000 under arms in this state, and men swear that they will not submit if it costs the last man in the state. I can hear the fife and drum from morning until night, and see men in rank and file all day, and every car that comes into town crowded with soldiers. I see some of my cousins that was but little boys when I left here 7 years ago, drilling every day. There are thousands of soldiers passing through this state every day from the south on their way to Virginia. Some here think that Maryland will become a great battlefield some of these days. If so, I will feel for Susan. An invaded country is no place for ladies. Anne, it makes my heart sick to think of the state of our once happy and yet beloved country, for there is no history that tells of any country that was ever happier than ours. And now, to see two brave and warlike enemies armed with all the deadly instruments that art and wealth could procure, marching over our once peaceable country, and to think when they meet in the bloody battlefields what destruction and what misery they can produce. But, Anne, what is most horrid of all in this contest is that brother will meet brother, and father will meet son in the strife. For there are but few families in the North but have members of that family in the South, and the people of the South are in the same way. As for myself, no matter what side I might take might bring me in contact with a brother or a cousin or uncle, and God forbid that I should ever be found in the arms against either. The mails will be stopped here in a day or two. If you see proper, you can drop me a few lines to Morrow, Illinois, as I will call there as I return. No more at present, but remain with sincerity. Your friend, P. Burns.
1861, P. Burns writing to his friend Anne of the misery to come.
And many people at the beginning of that war thought it would be over in just months, that, you know, one big clash, that would do it. And then, of course, 4 years and some 500,000 dead later, it would be over.
Yeah. Also in this chapter of War Letters, the book, the collection, that volume, there are letters about the misery. We've got to go through it. It is necessary to end slavery. It is necessary to keep the country, the Union, together.
Absolutely, and that's one of the things that I try and make sure is very balanced in these books, is that there's no political agenda. So there's no, what I'm trying to show are the different viewpoints. So we might have a Confederate soldier saying that he's defending his homeland, where a Northern soldier's talking about the cause of slavery. And just to give people a sense of the different voices that are reflected. And so not all the letters focus on the hardships of war, but the pride of the troops. One of my favorite letters in War Letters is by a peacekeeper in Bosnia, an American soldier, who writes home to his son that he, since there are no toy shops or stores, that he can buy a gift to send a birthday present home for his son's 7th birthday. He's sending him an American flag. And they'd flown it over the base in his son's honor for his birthday. And he said, I want you to know that when the people here in Bosnia see this flag, they know it means peace and freedom after years of war. And you should always be proud of what, you know, your father and we are doing over here and how proud I am of you. And it's just, it's an incredibly poignant letter. And so, again, what I try and do is show make sure the letters reflect the different perspectives and voices of those who serve and of their families on the home front.
Mm. Andrew Carroll is our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. He is the director of the Legacy Project, and he is also the editor now of two books of war correspondence. The first, War Letters, the second, just out, Behind the Lines. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Behind the Lines took you across the ocean, around the world.
Absolutely. I went to 35 countries to research the new book, and I went to Iraq, I went to Afghanistan, I went to all these places to meet with our troops, but to also talk to people who were involved with these wars from the foreign perspective. So in Iraq, we have letters and emails by Iraqi civilians giving you a sense of what it feels like for them, some of them expressing their anger at the insurgents who are coming to their country and causing all this mayhem, and some of them just talking about their fears of just what day-to-day life is like. And going back to World War II, we've got letters by Russian troops and British troops. And what's amazing is that as you read through the book, you actually start not seeing nationality, but just the humanity of the writers. It's no longer Australian wife, but just a widow who's lost her husband in Vietnam. A lot of us forget that there were Australian troops fighting along with the Americans during that war. And so just the individuality of the writers comes through. But the trip itself was amazing. And that's actually what I'm going to talk about on Thursday night, sort of the behind the scenes of how we find these letters and the hair-raising experiences in Iraq and Afghanistan. And there were some pretty terrifying times. But just that this is a larger mission, we absolutely hope that people will bring letters, whether it's to the talk on Thursday or to the play on Friday. That's why I do this, is because I love meeting people. I love to see the letters they want to bring. They don't have to bring originals, and we actually prefer photocopies. But the mission continues, and especially in light of what's going on today with Iraq and Afghanistan, we want people to know that we absolutely want to find emails and preserve them, make sure the voices from this war are recorded the way that voices from past wars have been. And I think we need to have this discussion in our country about the impact of war on our troops and on their families. And that's not a political statement. It's just, you know, on the one hand, we want to make sure their sacrifices are honored, and on the other hand, we want to make sure that future generations understand the cost of war and the realities of it. And so it's been great how, in the discussions we've had in other communities, people from different political perspectives can come together and agree on certain fundamentals, and the letters, I think, are the spark to help that conversation along, and it's one that I think we absolutely must have. It's just there's no greater decision a society makes than when or if we should go to war, and it's something I think we should do with a full understanding of what will happen.
Mm. Andrew Carroll will be on the campus of Eastern Illinois University in Charleston later this week, and he just mentioned a couple of the events scheduled: a talk Thursday evening at 7 in the Lumpkin Building, a book signing Friday from 11 a.m. until 1 p.m. at the EIU Union Bookstore. There will also be there will be a stage presentation of some of the letters that you'll find in War Letters and Behind the Lines, and perhaps other letters that have come to light since. And that is set for this weekend and next weekend. That's this coming weekend, the 27th, 28th of January 2006, and then the following weekend, February 3rd and 4th and February 5th. And I don't know if this coming Sunday, the 29th, there is a presentation.
There is. I believe at 3:30.
Okay. No. Here it is. We got it right now here. Let me pull another piece of paper out of my folder here. Friday and Saturday, the 27th and 28th at 7:30 p.m., and then on Sunday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, then the following weekend, February 4th and 5th at 7:30, and Sunday at 3 p.m. at the Tarbell Arts Center. That's on South 9th Street, so you can give those folks a call if you want more information, and that number is 581-2787.
And I just want to emphasize to people that I know that the idea of war letters, we sort of think that, oh, it's just going to be all these combat letters and so forth. There's so much variety in these, and there's so many amazing stories, and there's a lot of humor, too. And every single person I've talked to coming out of our past productions has said the same thing, is that was nothing like I expected. And I'm going to come back and bring friends to it or bring my family to it. I want my kids to see this. Again, the power of these letters is beyond what I can really express, and just the personalities of these troops, and there's so many great stories that come along with it. So I think people will really enjoy it and get a lot out of it.
Let's talk with a listener who's calling in from Charleston this afternoon on line 4. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to ask your guest whether he had possibly heard of the book Testament by Benson Broderick.
I'm not familiar with that book, but I'd love to know more about it.
Okay. It was a collection of Civil War letters that was found in an attic trunk in Washington State. The person involved in the letters is Benjamin W. Baker. He is called Webb. And he was born and raised here in Coles County near the Lincoln Homestead.
Wow.
And this is the story of his time in the Civil War. It says here in the front piece that he had stood in the audience of one of the Lincoln-Douglas debates, became a staunch Unionist, and answered one of Abraham Lincoln's first calls. I had been given this to me by a friend. She says that the emotional content of it is tremendous. And I can't say that I really read it myself. But if you're down in Charleston, you might check at the Lincoln Bookstore.
And it's called Testament?
Testament.
Okay, and the author again is?
Benson, B-E-N-S-O-N, Bob Rick, B-O-B-R-I-C-K.
The reason this is of great interest to me is one of the things I love about the letters that we receive are so many of them are what we call lost and found letters, where someone buys a new barn or a house, and as they're tearing up the floorboards, they'll find tucked into the wood old letters that have been stuffed there, or someone goes to an estate sale or an antique sale, and they'll buy a bundle of old letters, not realizing that there's these incredible eyewitness accounts of history in them. And in fact, we're doing an exhibit at the National Postal Museum, which is run by the Smithsonian here in Washington, D.C., called War Letters Lost and Found. And they're in fact, the majority of the letters we have on exhibit, just by coincidence, are from Illinois. We have a Korean War letter that was found in a bank wastebasket by one of the clerks who then sent it to us. And we have a woman who found a Civil War letter, and it had originally been just literally floating down the street. And this is years ago. Someone had picked it up and given it to her, and then she sent us a copy of it later. And what's amazing about these letters is not just the stories behind them, but the history they record. And one of my favorites is we have a letter by a young soldier who, at the end of World War II, was taken into Tojo's hospital room. And Tojo, as I'm sure you know, all your listeners know, this is the ex-premier of Japan. This is the architect of Pearl Harbor. This was essentially the Osama bin Laden of his day. And this young soldier was called in to watch over Tojo because he had tried to kill himself. He had put a gun to his chest and pulled the trigger, but he had missed his heart. And so the American MPs resuscitated Tojo, took him to the hospital to keep him alive, ironically because they wanted to hang him as a war criminal, so they needed him alive. But so this young soldier was brought in. He was a medic, and he was ordered, all right, you're going to watch him over the evening and make sure that his blood pressure and everything is stable. And so this soldier sits down and writes a letter to his parents saying, "Dear Mom and Dad, you are not going to believe where I am now. I'm sitting 3 feet from Hideki Tojo." And then he goes on to describe his ambivalence about taking care of him, just I think as any one of us would if we were the in charge of helping a wounded Osama bin Laden stay alive. And that letter was bought at a yard sale for 50 cents. And it would have been lost to history had someone not found it and preserved it. And that's the whole mission of our project.
Well, I hope to see you when you're down here in Charleston.
Well, I hope to. And thank you so much for the...
I listen to this program 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, and I can't think of the host name. I appreciate you having this author on your show.
Well, thank you for calling in, and thank you for being such a devoted listener, and it's Celeste. And thank you so much for your comments. Let's go on and talk with another listener. Caller in Oak Forest on line one. Hi.
Hi. I was just calling to ask you if you have this book on tape, because I enjoy listening to books of this nature when instead of thinking of the voices that myself, you have usually a actor or actress reading them. So I was wondering, could we get the book on tape?
Yes, and thank you for asking. Both books, both War Letters and Behind the Lines, are on tape and on CD. And in fact, the audio edition of War Letters was nominated for a Grammy in the Best Spoken Word category. And both of them, the publisher did a terrific job of getting famous actors, a lot of really well-known people reading the letters. And it is, I hear the same thing from a lot of people. It's the kind of book where you can just pop it in, listen to a couple letters as you're doing your commute or driving or whatever. But even I've read these letters so many times, learn new things about them when I hear them aloud, and it really brings them to life. And we wanted to make sure there were audio editions for people, who do drive and just like to listen, but also for those who are visually impaired and wouldn't be able to read the books. Because, again, the whole spirit of this project is to make it as accessible and egalitarian as possible.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for the call. I don't know that if I would want to be driving and listening to these letters, to be honest with you.
Yeah, there's some that you might blur over a bit just because they are, but not all of them. There are some in there, but certainly not all.
What was it like when you did the traveling for Behind the Lines? What was it like visiting the places you had been reading about in the letters you'd been visiting the places you'd been reading about in the letters?
That, to me, was the highlight of the trip, going to the beaches of Normandy, going to the trenches of World War One, throughout Belgium and in parts of France where they still keep some of the old trenches intact, and going to the DMZ in Korea, where technically we're still in a state of war. It's only been a ceasefire. The war is not resolved, and we all know the tensions over there. It was, and then, without question, going to Iraq. That was the first time in my life I've been to what's essentially a war zone. The place that I was about the safest place you could be. It was around the airport, but I ventured out a little bit. And the closest I came to any sort of harrowing experience, this was early on in the war. It was November of 2003. We were leaving, and our flight out of what's called Bayat, Baghdad International Airport, was late, and we just were sitting in the terminal wondering. The terminal is just like a giant makeshift tent, almost literally. And we were watching CNN. Hours are going by, wondering what's going on. And we learned this from CNN. They said news from Baghdad International Airport: a DHL cargo plane was struck by a missile upon takeoff. We were the next flight out. And it was the first time that the insurgents had hit a plane with a missile since the war had started. And we didn't know if they had scattered or if they were waiting for the next flight to go, and that was us, and if their aim was getting better. And I remember walking up to one of the troops, and I said, I don't mean to bother you, just sort of a dumb civilian, but I'm just wondering, are we still flying out today? And he's like, well, of course you are. Why wouldn't you? And I mentioned the DHL incident, and he said, look, when these C-130s take off, they go very slowly, and they're filled with fuel. So if these guys do get a direct hit, it'll be over very quickly. Which weren't the most comforting words I was hoping to hear.
Yeah.
But in those 10 minutes, you know, flying over Iraq were the most terrifying of my life. And what it made me realize is this is such a small experience, and that our troops go through this not just every time they fly in and out of Iraq, but every day they're there. And it really gave me a sense of the sacrifice they're making on a just almost a minute-by-minute level. And I wanted to convey that in the book through the letters, through their words, and through the introduction and the photos that we have throughout, to really bring the reader along on this journey so you have not just the letters but the experience of finding them. And it really is, it was just an extraordinary trip throughout the whole country, throughout the whole world, really.
Yeah. Now, you were in Iraq, and you were a civilian, but you were on your way out.
Yeah.
And one of the things that touched me, one of the things that I found most touching in Behind the Lines is letters from civilians who are not so fortunate.
They're trapped.
Yeah.
And they're literally caught in the crossfire. And there's a whole chapter in this book on that subject of how civilians are impacted in times of war. More civilians were killed in the past, have been killed in the past 100 years than troops. And we tend to overlook that. And whether it's from the Holocaust or whether it's from the troops who've been caught in Allied bombings during the war, or actually the enemy bombings during the war and so forth, that they are the ones who are the most helpless and the most vulnerable. And so we have letters from citizens in Sarajevo during the siege. We have people from, young Russian children during World War II, and even from the Civil War. In fact, there's a letter we have from Illinois about a woman whose husband and son were shot by Union soldiers because they didn't give the Union Army what they wanted. And so it's a side of war that is sometimes overlooked, and I want to make sure it was represented. And I think those letters are some of the most powerful we have.
Yeah, there's a couple of letters. I think there's two letters from Dutch resistors who are about to be hanged during World War II. There's a letter from a survivor of Dresden.
Yep. And in fact, you mentioning Dresden, probably the most famous letter we have in this book, and all these letters are previously unpublished, is by a young Kurt Vonnegut, who survived Dresden. He was a prisoner of war. He was serving in the United States Army. He was captured during the Battle of the Bulge. And he was on a POW train, which went through Dresden. They took him off for a bit. And then, unbeknownst to the Allies and to the Germans there, the air raid began and just pretty much wiped out Dresden. And Vonnegut and his fellow troops were put underground into this, what was essentially a slaughterhouse. It was an underground sort of refrigerator where they kept old meat. And that's why he survived. And when he came out, he looked out and the city was just gone. And he wrote this extraordinary letter to his father just months after he was liberated. He was just a kid. I think he was 21 or 22 at the time. And so he very graciously let us use that letter, which, again, had never been published before.
Yeah. And the other letter from Dresden, are there two letters from Dresden?
Yeah, Vonnegut and then the German who survived.
Yeah, the German
who talked
about
losing his family and just what it was like to be above ground during the attack.
Yeah, and it was so horrific. He was ready. He wished he was dead.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Another thing that in Behind the Lines that I found interesting was to see the pictures that you've included. Sarajevo, for example, all the cemeteries.
Yep, and that's the thing you notice when you go there. It's just they're everywhere. I mean, they just, because it's not a big city, so they've got to pack in whatever open space they had, so you'll see it in what used to be soccer stadiums or a children's playground, they're now cemeteries. And yet what also comes through is just the sheer resilience. And my guide and my translator, this young man who was turned 19 the day the war began, and we just, like, he was a high school graduate, wanted to go to college, be in a band, just like many, you know, young teenage boys, and suddenly this war comes into his home, and he had to join the military, and he saw friends die, and his father was shot and killed by a Serb sniper. And I asked him as we were walking around, especially this one graveyard where so many of his friends were buried, you must hate the Serbs. I mean, how can you not have this sense of anger? And he said, no, it has to stop. And as it turns out, his girlfriend at the time, now his wife, is a Serb. And he was one of the stories I came across of reconciliation. When I went to the to Pearl Harbor, one of the docents who was a survivor of the attack took me around, and we were talking about how sometimes Japanese veterans will come and visit Pearl Harbor. And I said, how do you feel about that? Is there also this sense of anger? And he said, no. You know, in fact, in some ways, I can communicate with these guys because we've gone through this shared experience. A lot of my civilian friends don't understand. And, you know, many of them are, you know, express their apology. They think what Japan did was wrong. It was dishonorable. And in fact, when you go to Tokyo, I want you to meet a friend of mine, and which I did. And it just these friendships that have forged out of war are quite remarkable. And so through the photos, the portraits of these people and of the places I visited, I wanted the reader to get a sense of what I was going through as well.
Mm. Let's take another call before we run out of time here this afternoon. A listener in Charleston, line 4, go ahead.
Yeah, I just have a comment. I don't have a question.
Okay.
I'm a veteran myself, and I'm one of the lucky persons appearing in the production this weekend, and I just want to say the little I've heard from you, Mr. Carroll, you make it live more for me.
Oh, well, it's an honor to talk to you, and we're very much looking forward to the weekend.
Well, I won't be able to make your presentation Thursday because we'll be rehearsing, but I look forward to meeting you.
Absolutely, and thank you. I mean, I can't, and this is not a setup. We didn't know each other was going to be calling
not.
And so forth. But
I play a number of people, John Nash. So, no, it's not a setup at all.
No. But it's I've heard from the people who are working on the, you know, from the production side, how much effort the actors are putting into this, how amazing it is, and the buzz already is very good. And so I think it's just going to be a great couple of performances that we're doing.
Okay, thank you much.
Thank you so much. I look forward to meeting you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. You're still soliciting correspondence, clearly.
Absolutely.
Okay, now for someone considering sending you some correspondence, you recommend a Xerox, right?
We prefer a photocopy. Hold on to the original unless you're going to throw it out. And like that widow who we alluded to earlier in the program, that she said, I've got no, you know, children, my husband's passed away, these letters will just be gone if no one gets them. Mm. Then, of course, we'll take the originals. But we just don't want the families to feel they have to give up something. Anyone can go to our website, warletters.com, just one word, warletters.com, with information on how to preserve your letters, who we are, what we're looking for. I'm actually going to be, my next book is going to be a letters of faith. And so I'm looking for letters on the subject of God, spirituality, religion, anything along those lines from any war in our history, and that's the next project. So if anyone has letters of faith, that would be wonderful. But on any subject matter, and I can't emphasize the humor aspect enough, there are so many funny letters that these troops write. We're weaving them into the performance just because that is a part of the war experience, too. As I said, it's how these troops cope with their experiences. But, too, you know, this is a performance we want people to enjoy and not feel that it's something that is just, you know, just from start to finish, just very heavy and depressing. You know, these troops have got wonderful personalities, and they come through in these correspondences.
Yeah. Well, on that note, would you please pick up Behind the Lines and go to page 387 and read the letter that Nathan B. Moore wrote to his newborn great-granddaughter, Elaine Lucille Banks, on May 20th, 1916. This was 51 years after he fought in the Civil War. Please read that letter.
This is one of my favorites. It's a perfect one to end on. So again, he's writing to his great-granddaughter, essentially on her birth. You have come to a world full of great problems, with many vexations and sad conditions, and at a time when great and momentous questions fill the minds of all mankind, and war, horrible war, is filling the nations with desolation and sorrow. Yet 'tis a good old world, all about us in nature, so much that is grand and beautiful. I sincerely hope that as your young life expands, you may be able to grasp and retain with unusual power in your life a large measure of the beauty, pleasure, and happiness all about you, and live to see these great problems which vex us so at present, settled on principles of justice and right, and men shall learn to war no more. And this was a veteran from the Civil War who had certainly seen it firsthand.
Yeah. And and the page opposite, we have a picture of the baby.
Of little Elaine Lucille Banks, yeah. Yes. And it was her granddaughter who sent me this. So it's just a wonderful addition to the book.
Yeah. There we have to leave it. We're out of time. Let me mention once again, run down what's happening this weekend and next in Charleston, Illinois, at Eastern Illinois University, coming up this Thursday, 7 p.m. Our guest, Andrew Carroll, will be giving a talk at the Lumpkin Building at South 7th Street on the campus. Then Friday morning, beginning at 11 o'clock and running into the afternoon until 1 p.m., a book signing in the Union Bookstore at EIU. Then the production of War Letters. Six dates coming up for this. This coming weekend, Friday and Saturday, at 7:30 p.m., and then Sunday, this Sunday, at 3 p.m., then the following weekend, February 4th and 5th, 2006, at 7:30 p.m., and Sunday, the 6th of February, at 3 p.m. at the Tarbell Arts Center on South 9th Street. For more information on that, you can call the box office. The number, area code 217-581-2787. Both the books, War Letters and Behind the Lines, are published by Scribner. They're both also available in audio, on tape, and on CD. Andrew, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Andrew Carroll, our guest this afternoon, director of the Legacy Project. 8 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time, settlement prices should be in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thank you much, Celeste. From the Chicago Board of Trade, a bit of an update at the board today as the wheat rallied, the corn following suit. They were up a nickel in the nearby March contract. The beans finishing the day down 3.25 in the March contracts. Our own director of ag programming here, Dave Dickey, taking a look at some of the technical side of the market and tells me that the 50s, the 20s, and the 100-day moving average on the March were all crossed today to the upside in that corn pit. So that'll be something we'll talk with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, about during the closing market report. It'll happen at 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock this afternoon. Beans putting in, on the other hand, in a couple of outside down days in both the March and the November contracts, so that'll be something to watch, too. We'll take a look at those numbers in complete detail in a moment. We'll start at the Kansas City Board of Trade this afternoon. The March contract in the hard red winter wheat pit today had a high of $3.86, their low $3.78, settlement price at $3.85.5, and they were up 5.5 cents on the day. July futures up 5.5 as well, 3.85.75 on the high, the low at 77.5, a settlement price there at $3.84.5 per July hard red winter wheat from Kansas City at 3.79 for the day, up 5.5 cents. March wheat in Chicago, 3.33.5, the high, the low at 32.75, settlement price for the soft red winter wheat, 3.32.5, they were up 6.5 cents today. May futures, 343.5, the high, the low at 335.75, settlement price at 343.75, or rather 343.25, they were up 6.25 today. July futures from the wheat pit, this is your harvest month, 353.75 on the high, the low at 45.25, settlement price at 353.25, half cent off the high, they finished 6.75 higher on the day. September futures at 363.5, the high, the low at 55.25, SEP wheat settled 363.25, up 6.75 as well, and the December futures were up 6.5 cents today at 375.5, the high at 76, the low at 67.5. Corn pit now, March contract on your nearby, up a nickel today, $2.13.5 the high, the low at 207.75, settled a quarter off the high at 213.25, they were up 5 cents in that March corn contract. The May futures at 223.5 on the high, low at 17.5, a settlement price at 223.25. They were up a nickel a bushel in July futures at 232.25 high, low at 226.75, settlement price there at 232, up 4.75. September futures, 240 the high, the low at 35.5. Settlement price at 239.75, up 4.25. And December contract in the corn bed. This year harvest month, new crop, 250.25 the high. Low at 245.75, couldn't quite stand to stay above that 250 mark for the settlement price. Finished at 249.5, up 3.5 cents on the day. March contract at 256.5 high, low at 52.75. March 2007, corn 256.25, and they were up 3.25 for the day. Oat pit, the March contract now 191 on the nearby for the high. The low at 89.5, settlement price at $1.90.75. They were up a penny, and the May futures were up 1.25 at 184 even. Soy complex. This is where the losses at the board came today. 577.75 on the high. Low at 69.5. Settlement price for the March beans, 571.25. They were off down 3.25 for the day. May futures, 587.75 high. Low at 580. Settlement price at 581, off 4 cents. In July futures, 597.5 on the high. Low at 89.5, settlement price at 91.5, down 3.75. August contract, $6 the high, the low at $5.94, settled on that low down 3 cents for the beans. In September futures, they finished with a $6 high, a low at 95, and a settlement price at $5.95. They were down a penny for the day. November futures, your new crop, 607.75 the high. The low at $6.50, managed to stay above that for the day at 602.25 on the settlement price, down 2.5 cents. And the January beans down 3 cents today, 611 the high, the low at 06, settlement price at $6.75 a bushel for the January beans 2007. They were off 3 today. Bean meal, the March contract on this afternoon, a high of 181.80, settlement price at 179.40, settlement price at 179.90. They were down 60, that 179.40, the low, of course. Bean meal, the May contract, at 183.20, low at 181, settled at 181.50. They were off 90 cents. May March bean oil, 21.52, unchanged today. The high at 72, the low at 30. And the May bean oil had a high of 22.10, a low at 21.67, settled at 21.85. And they finished unchanged as well. Now here's Celeste with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange.
And we'll get to those just here in just a half sec. Let me tell you, overall, today was a lower day for livestock prices, livestock contracts on the Mercantile Exchange. Just one of the contracts that we follow, January feeder cattle, finished higher today.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
And now let's take a look at the specifics. January feeder cattle, as I mentioned today, finished higher on the day. The high price today was 113.22.5, the low 113.05, the settlement 113.15, that up 10 cents. March 112.05, the high, the low 111.45, the settlement 111.45, that down 32.5. April 112.50, the high 112.05, the low 112.27.5, the settlement, that down 15. February live cattle, 95.82.5, the high 94.90, the low 94.95, the settlement, that down 62.5. April live cattle, 94.05, the high 93.15, the low 93.20, the settlement, that down 75. February lean hogs, 58.90, the high 57.57.5, the low, the settlement 57.77.5, that down 132.5. April 63.60, the high 61.90, the low 60.